Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News. It's Monday, November 13th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. And we have news about the first group of Russians now evacuated from the Gaza Strip. They've now arrived in Cairo, the Egyptian capital. And you can only imagine what kind of deals or arrangements have been made between Russia and Hamas to allow Russian citizens to leave Gaza. Make no mistake, there is some level of support that has been promised. I don't know what that is. I don't have any details, but you can only imagine. Russia is probably saying to Hamas that, you know, if this whole thing escalates and gets out of hand, guess what? We're on the side of the Palestinians. That's probably what Russia has said. I'm just guessing. But now that Russian citizens are evacuated from Gaza, it might embolden Russia in terms of retaliatory attacks against Israel. Maybe not right away, but as this thing escalates out of hand, you can probably keep an eye open for that situation. In any case, it's all escalating, and Israel has carried out a drone strike now 40 kilometers inside Lebanon, so north of the Lebanon-Israel border. There was a drone strike. And Israel is talking like they have the right to now attack or invade Lebanon. And we'll get to some of that, but it's crazy. It's essentially that Israel is saying, well, I mean, and this is a simplification and a paraphrase, but essentially Israel is saying, well, there might be Hamas in Lebanon or Hamas supporters in Lebanon, and therefore, we can attack Lebanon. And hey, there might be Hamas supporters over here in Jordan. And we can, everywhere they want to attack, they can just say, well, there could be Hamas in there, So now we have the right to bomb. So that's kind of, a caricature of what's going on. It's very, very disturbing. But let's actually start out with news out of Australia again today. Now, remember, I covered this, 2 days ago? How in Australia they had this massive comms outage that was devastating. And I don't know, 3 days of an outage for some people, and it affected half the country. And it brought down 911 services. It brought down train operations. I think it was in Melbourne. It brought down, internet, phone service, everything. It was catastrophic. Well, now in Australia, its ports have been hit by a, quote, nationally significant cyber incident. And container ships are starting to pile up. This affects 40% of Australia's maritime freight because it has brought down a company called DP World Australia. Yeah, DP World Australia. They run the container terminals in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and Fremantle. I guess that's how you pronounce it. I'm not familiar with that city. In any case, these four major cities, the ports that handle containers in and out, they're all stalled now. And it's not clear what this so-called, quote, cyber incident really is. They're not saying that it was a cyber attack. Yeah, they're probably hoping that people will assume it's a cyber attack, but they're saying it's a cyber incident. Well, that could be. Remember Dangerous Dan that I mentioned the other day? Like, Dangerous Dan, he works in every IT department. And what he does is he screws up all the configuration files and he brings down servers, and he forgets to delete temporary files and he has buffer overruns on all the databases. And Dangerous Dan may have struck a DP World Australia to the point where their company is no longer functioning. So, just as I was talking about the other day, these single points of failure in our increasingly fragile world where, one bad file, one bad line of code can cause a cascade of failures. And now we're looking at it. 40% of the containers that normally come into Australia are stalled out. It's a logjam there now because of this. Just another example. And then Australia's National Cybersecurity Coordinator, who's actually given the title Air Marshal, Darren Goldie, Air Marshal. Why do you call the Air Marshal if you're a cybersecurity expert? Anyway, he's the, for whatever reason, he's the Air Marshal, Darren Goldie. He says, quote, DP World today advised the Australian government that the time frame for interruptions to continue is likely to be a number of days rather than weeks. I'm like, I wasn't thinking weeks until you said weeks. Now you got me freaked out. Weeks? I was hoping this might be hours, but now they're saying it's going to be a number of days. What happened to DP World? What happened? This same official announced, quote, DP World's IT system remains disconnected from the internet, significantly impacting their operations. We're working to restore their systems. Okay, well, if it's disconnected from the internet, that still doesn't tell you what happened, does it? Maybe they disconnected it from the internet themselves. Maybe they had an internal configuration problem. Maybe their routers all went down. Maybe their server room blew up. Who knows? Maybe there was a fire and they have no backups. Who knows? But I'm not hearing anybody say that this was a cyber attack or cyber terrorism or ransomware, although it could be. They're just calling it a cyber incident. And you know, really, that just means what we used to call a computer problem. What's wrong? I got a computer problem. Have you rebooted it? Oh, let me try that. Oh yeah, that fixed it. Yeah. Right? We've all grown up with computer problems. And you know, you reboot. That solves 99% of computer problems. But now they call it a cyber incident. So that way the people solving the problem, instead of just being called tech support, which doesn't sound very glamorous, they can be called cybersecurity officials. Yes. See, it's still the same thing. They're probably just running around rebooting everything. That's probably what's going on. All right. So that's the latest out of Australia. Now, do you recall the other day when I mentioned the number 88, and it was, I think the UN on that particular day had announced that 88 UN officials had been killed in Gaza because of the IDF bombing, right? So they announced 88. And I don't know if you heard that. It might have been a special report. I said, you know, I'm always suspicious when I hear the number 88, because one thing I learned from covering Ukraine is that the number 88 stands for, well, H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. So 88 is considered HH. And it's a code phrase that's used by, I guess, a bunch of Hitler-loving skinheads or whoever they are. And it means, I don't even want to say it, but it means blank Hitler, you know, and they both start with H. So blank Hitler, that's what people say. Or, I mean, the Hitler lovers say that, I guess. So when the UN announced they had 88 UN official or employees or whoever, 88 UN, I guess it's officials, were killed in Gaza, I was like, is this code word for the fact that the UN is run by Nazis? I'm wondering if that's the case. Well, today we had the number 88 pop up again. I keep seeing 88 out there because it's being pushed out there, this time by Al Jazeera, which is typically a pro-Palestine, a Middle East news organization. I think it's funded by the government of Qatar. And they did an analysis of satellite photos of the number of Israeli vehicles that exists in North Gaza, essentially, or northwest of Gaza. It's kind of a staging area for the tanks and infantry fighting vehicles and so on. So they did a satellite imagery analysis and they announced, quote, the number of Israeli vehicles has decreased on November 8th to 295, after it was previously 383 on November 3rd. And then they said, that means 88 vehicles have been damaged or destroyed and removed. So they're saying, look, the Palestinians have killed 88 Israeli vehicles. And again, 88 means blank Hitler. So keep your eyes peeled for this number, because, you know, if you think about it, you've got the Palestinian fighters that are taking out these armored vehicles using RPGs. And I think most of them are probably screaming, you know, Allahu Akbar, because that's what they've been saying in the videos. I've seen quite a few of the street videos. But is somebody also saying blank Hitler with the 88s? Huh? There's a question for you. All right, let's talk about some escalations here, because this is actually leading us to what could become nuclear war. We have the Al-Qassam brigades in Lebanon. They are now declaring responsibility for the bombing of northern Haifa and the Shlomi and Naharaya settlements in what they call northern occupied Palestine, with several concentrated missile barrages in response. This is a statement from the Al-Qassam brigades. In response to the occupations, massacres, and aggression against our people in the Gaza Strip. So, Al-Qassam, you know, there are a number of groups, not just Hezbollah, but this one also, Al-Qassam. They are launching rockets and hitting targets in Israel, which they call the, occupied Palestine. And this is threatening to escalate. There have been some hints recently that Hezbollah has anti-ship missiles. They put out some videos. They're kind of like little propaganda pieces, little threatening, like, you know, teaser snippets of, oh, look, we've got anti-ship missiles. And then they show images of like U.S. ships out there in the Mediterranean Sea, and leaving you with the impression that, hey, we might be taking out some of these ships pretty soon with some of these missiles. And it turns out they do have some pretty sophisticated missile systems, although, of course, U.S. aircraft carriers, especially the Gerald R. Ford, are extremely well-equipped with defensive systems. Nevertheless, if some of these missiles get through, it wouldn't take much to send a message that the U.S. Navy is not bulletproof, and that may be exactly what Hezbollah or other groups are intending to do. Oh, by the way, I kind of mentioned this yesterday, but it's worth another little more detailed look. Headline, BRICS should create their own internet. This is from Maksut Shadaev, the head of Russia's Ministry of Digital Development, Communications, and Mass Media. And he says that in addition to Russia and China and other nations developing their own BRICS currency to compete, of course, with the dollar, well, really to dethrone the dollar, they should create their own internet. And, oh, I'm sorry, it looks like it was actually stated by Dmitry Gusev of the State Duma Control Committee, and there was a document submitted to Maksut Shadaev, the head of the digital development and so on. The proposal says that Russia should develop, quote, an internet where traditional values and goodness prevail. Isn't that interesting that they choose those phrases, traditional values, instead of neoliberal progressive values, which are, you know, transgenderism and mass money printing and consumerism and materialism and whatever else now characterizes the West. But they're saying traditional values and where goodness prevail. Now, of course, goodness can be defined in any way by anybody. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of doctors out there that think they're carrying out goodness by jabbing children with more vaccines, right? So that could be anything. But they're saying that they could implement this with technical, organizational, and civilizational capabilities common to the entire BRICS Association. Now, in case you're keeping track, BRICS currently comprises Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. That's where the acronym BRICS comes from. But is also being joined by Argentina, Egypt. Mm-hmm. That's suddenly relevant with what's going on in Gaza. Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. And that expanded group is referred to as BRICS Plus. And those nations will represent nearly half of global GDP by the year 2040, according to current projections. So, and certainly those countries will encompass more than half, I mean, way more than half of the world's population. Seems like that's, I mean, don't China and India, what are they at, about 1.3 billion each? So that's 2.6 billion people. Well, that right there is one third of the world's population, or almost close to one third. So yeah, I would say altogether, the BRICS plus nations, especially when a few more join, it's going to be about half the world's GDP and maybe half the world's population, something like that. It's significant, is my point. But you know, all these nations, all these governments, they're all in support of censorship. I mean, they can talk about a free and open internet, but none of them believe in it. They all believe in total control over their populations. That's true whether you're talking about the UK or China. Even though Xi Jinping, he called for recently changes in the way the internet works. He said, quote, "We advocate prioritizing development and building a more inclusive and prosperous cyberspace." He said, really? China's one of the worst in terms of censorship and deplatforming people and arresting people for what they say. And of course, Russia censors people as well. And Western Europe throws people in jail for what they say online. So, you know, censorship is universal. I mean, think about all the Western countries, Australia and New Zealand in particular. Canada, great example there, throwing pastors in prison and doctors stripping their medical licenses away if they didn't go along with the latest pandemic. So, you know, make no mistake, no governments of the world support free speech. It's just, it's incompatible with their control. And by the way, kind of related to the BRICS nations here, China and Russia just signed a massive food trade deal that is worth, I think, what was it, $25.8 billion. It's a grain supply contract where Russia is going to be supplying China with grain. Basically, this is China just nailing down an insurance policy against famine. And this is all happening under the Belt and Road Initiative, which we've talked about before. And our guest, Andy Shechtman, has talked about quite a lot. And the BRICS currency is going to be launched, I understand, sometime next year, mid-year next year. And combined with the Belt and Road Initiative, which is kind of a pathway or channels of relatively free trade between participating countries, you're going to see more and more countries trading with each other without using the dollar and without engaging the United States. And this is another such deal right here. And China, given that they can't produce enough food domestically to feed their populations, China has just signed this deal with Russia, which benefits China in terms of food security, you know, just in case the U.S. blocks exports of food to China, because China buys a lot of corn and wheat and barley and other grains from the United States. But also then this gives Russia more revenue to support Russia's domestic economy, which has actually been doing very, very well since the U.S. put harsh sanctions on Russia and also cut off Russia from SWIFT. And there was a story the other day, I forgot the source, that Putin was saying that actually the West's economic sanctions against Russia didn't have that much of an effect. If anything, it's actually kind of a gift to Russia. If you think about it, to sanction Russia from all the Western nations means that Russian businesses and Russian industry can't get a bunch of loans from Western banks and they can't sell their products to Western buyers. So instead, and they can't deposit their money with Western banks. So instead, what's happening is the wealthy Russian industrialists and innovators and entrepreneurs and so on, they have no choice but to reinvest in Russia for the most part. And so what's happening is Russia's industrial capabilities are being magnified. Russia's infrastructure is being built at a record pace. Russia's innovation, its manufacturing, including of weapons of war like the Landsat drones and so on, is rapidly accelerating because, frankly, a lot of the wealthy Russians have nowhere else to put money but to do it in Russia. In fact, Russia has full employment right now, so much so that they have a labor shortage. They can't find enough people to staff the expansions that they're trying to build or invest in terms of new production lines. So, you know, Russia's economy is actually at risk of overheating right now, growing so rapidly that they may have to raise interest rates in order to kind of temper that. Whereas in the United States, you have people looking for jobs. People can't find jobs or forced to work extra jobs to cover food inflation because the United States is falling apart. But Russia, being severely sanctioned, it's actually doing better. If you get sanctioned by the West, your country will actually prosper, it turns out. Huh, pretty wild. By the way, if you're keeping track of propaganda out of Israel, there was something kind of funny that happened over the weekend. Just a desperate piece of propaganda where the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, he claimed, and he held this up, he claimed that Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, the book, was found in a child's bedroom in northern Gaza. So they claim it was a children's living room that had been turned into a military operations base of Hamas, he says. And so he holds up Mein Kampf and he says, look, you know, they're teaching the children to hate Jews. I mean, seriously, you think, I mean, number one, why would a child even want to read Mein Kampf at all? No child would understand it. It's beyond the scope of any child's mind. And then he said that Palestinian schools are teaching this to children. So I guess he thinks that Mein Kampf is like the, you know, third grade required reading or something. And maybe this is why he thinks it's okay to bomb schools in Gaza. Well, they must be, we have to bomb them. They're teaching Mein Kampf. I mean, and then he says that Palestinian schools are, quote, filled with hate, with prejudice, with curses, with all sorts of information, which is totally distorted against what Jews are, what Israel is all about. Yeah, I have no doubt that there's extreme hatred on both sides, but, you know, Mr. Herzog, have you heard your own Israelis speak recently? Have you heard any of that? Yeah, we got to play some of that for you. So I'll have to narrate this video here. It's about a 30-second video. It's a French-Israeli lawyer that's being interviewed. It's a woman, and she's speaking in French, so I'm going to have to read the translation here. But check out this video. She says, so excuse me, but there are no innocent civilians in Gaza, she says. And the guy says, really? It's complicated to say there are no innocent civilians when there are children, when there are women. Excuse me. And she says, what I'm trying to say is from the moment they are born, the education from birth is anti-Semitic. Yes, I'm sorry. I must interrupt. The guy says, I'm sorry, Neely. It's not acceptable. She says, he says, excuse me. Frankly, we can hear a lot of arguments, but it's unacceptable to say that it's justified to kill children who are 1 or 2 years old. And anyway, so that was a newscaster male speaking to this French Israeli lawyer who are saying there are no innocent civilians in Gaza, which means that includes children. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's intense hatred on both sides, but don't pretend, you know, Mr. Herzog, the president of Israel, don't pretend it's only coming from the Palestinians. And, you know, by the way, they've grown up there in Gaza in a giant concentration camp. That doesn't tend to make happy people, by the way, joyful, abundant people. No, they're treated like prisoners all the time. Moving on to domestic politics, the National Pulse.com, its founder, Rahim Kassam, he's the editor-in-chief, excuse me, of the National Pulse. He put out a story talking about how he believes Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a, quote, psyop that's designed to take votes away from Donald Trump and to empower the establishment that RFK actually stands or claims to stand against. So Rahim Kassam says, quote, obviously, if you look at RFK's track record, he's incredibly left-wing. He's not just left-wing, but he's supported both far-left progressive philosophy while also backing globalist left, establishment left politicians almost his entire life. He's almost the worst of both worlds, he says. And by almost, he means that RFK has taken a stand against Big Pharma, and he does have a familial conviction that the state security apparatus does not always have people's best interests in mind. So he has a couple of redeeming features, says Kassam. But the rest, he says 80% of his platform is a complete psyop on conservatives. He says if anyone else who was running for president had a CIA officer running their campaign, the alarm bells would go ringing, but nobody's talking about this. And that's what tells you that a trick is being played here. Yeah, Dr. Shiva mentioned the same thing. When I interviewed Dr. Shiva recently, he said that the current campaign manager for RFK Jr. The previous campaign manager was Dennis Kucinich, who is very much a pro-peace person and is strongly opposed to the Israeli bombing of Gaza. But Kucinich is no longer with the RFK campaign. Instead, a CIA officer or someone with CIA links is currently running the campaign, according to now two sources. All right, so we have to keep our eyes on that situation and see where that goes. Over the weekend, Sayer G. of Green Med Info, he published an article saying that he rescinds his endorsement of RFK Jr., and he explains why. And basically, Sayer G. is in favor of peace in the Middle East and not the continued bombing of Palestinian civilians, which apparently RFK Jr. cannot bring himself to speak out against the bombing of hospitals and children for whatever reason. So I think he's lost a lot of support across a large number of people. And I share many of Sayer's sentiments in this case, but I've been very disillusioned about a lot of candidates, you know, including Trump himself, who actually seems to agree with RFK on the situation in the Middle East. And I still have issues with Trump over Operation Warp Speed, by the way. So yeah, this is getting very, very complicated. Well, of course it is. It involves the Middle East. Getting back to the Middle East, by the way, let's talk about Israel's strikes against Lebanon and the escalation of this situation, which may lead to nuclear war. This is from timesofisrael.com, which is a pro-Israeli news site. Israel said to carry out drone strike 40 kilometers inside Lebanon. Lebanese media outlets reported that an IDF drone struck a truck near the coastal village of Al-Zahrani, some 40 kilometers from the Israeli border. There were no reports of injuries. The IDF said it carried out a strike on a site from which surface-to-air missiles were fired at military drones that were flying over the Israel-Lebanon border. So essentially what this means is that Israel's flying drones over Lebanon. Lebanon tries to shoot them down, and Israel says, how dare you try to shoot down our drones that are spying on you? We're going to fire our drones at your targets, at your vehicles, your launch sites, and that's what they did. So this is being called the deepest Israeli strike into Lebanon since hostilities ramped up after Hamas's October 7th onslaught. Now, by the way, on top of that, I have a couple of sources that have told me that there are 100% absolutely, you know, full certainty U.S. Special Forces troops fighting in Gaza right now, not simply in an advisory role, but fighting on the ground, running some of the tunnel warfare, whatever that looks like. And apparently some very heavy explosives have been set off inside certain tunnels, which actually, you know, makes sense from a military tactical point of view. Explosives can be very devastating underground because there's nowhere for the explosive force to go other than along the tunnels, you know? So yeah, tunnels can also be tombs with enough explosives down there. So anyway, U.S. Special Forces are fighting in Gaza. And you notice, by the way, over the weekend, we were told that a United States aircraft was destroyed or lost, or I forgot what word they use. But this aircraft was probably launched from one of the aircraft carriers that's in the area. And we're told, I think it's that five Americans died? I'd have to look up the exact numbers, but we're told it was a training accident. Yeah, a training accident. And it was in the Mediterranean Sea, actually, or, you know, Eastern Mediterranean Sea. So really a training accident? That's what you want us to believe? Sounds like some U.S. aircraft was shot down. And I don't know if this was a helicopter or a jet. The details are pretty sparse at the moment, but I could imagine a helicopter being shot down that was trying to ferry special forces over to Gaza, potentially. That's just one possible scenario. We don't know what it was, but we're told that whatever it was is a training accident. And I don't believe that for a minute. It might have been an evacuation of maybe a wounded U.S. soldier that they're trying to fly out of Gaza. And then, you know, somebody took a shot with an RPG and brought down a helicopter and killed five people. That could be what it is. But the point is that the U.S. is most definitely escalating in terms of deploying its forces in that area. And with Israel now attacking deeper into Lebanon and Lebanon threatening missiles that can strike U.S. naval vessels, not to mention all the things that Erdogan is saying from Turkey or things that the foreign minister is saying at Iran, who we've quoted several times here, things are heating up pretty darn quickly. Now, I want to play a video for you here from a man. I don't know who this is, but I think what he's saying, it's an American, and this was tweeted out by J.D. Sharp. And the sentiment of this man is, I think, quite indicative of what the American people are thinking. And maybe this is J.D. Sharp speaking himself. So check out this video. It's about 2 minutes, and it's important to understand that a lot of Americans are coming to the same conclusion that you're about to hear. Whether or not you agree with it, this is what a lot of people are thinking. Check this out.
All right, here's what's going on with Israel. Here's the big play that Israel is making and why the United States is involved. Israel is expanding and colonizing, and they're using the excuse of eradicating Hamas and invading every single country that harbors Hamas to do it. They're also using the American troops. So what's going to happen is they will be invading Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, in an effort to expand and colonize. And if any other Muslim country wants to jump in and try to stop them, they will threaten to nuke them. Their philosophy is basically, let us invade you and colonize you and take your country over, or you will be nuked. And they will be using the United States to do it. And a lot of this has to do with BRICS, the new economic agreement that really leaves Israel out between Brazil, Russia, India, China, and as of now it's South Africa, but it'll soon be Saudi Arabia as well. So that's the play. Israel is expanding and colonizing. They're using eradicating Hamas as the excuse to do so, and they are going to be using the United States troops, the United States money, and the United States weapons to do it. The huge problem with that is the United States is in no position right now to be a part of another war. It's going to require things like a worldwide travel advisory to be called for. We already have Hamas and Hezbollah here in the United States waiting for activation. Our economy is not good. 80% of the country doesn't want to go to this war. Our oil reserves are limited, which we need for a time of war to mobilize. And our munitions are low for our troops. But that's the play.
All right, excellent analysis there, posted by J.D. Sharp. I can't disagree with any of that. And I think the key point that he made there is that the West knows they're about to lose dollar hegemony or world reserve currency status because the BRICS nations are rolling out, you know, their currency, the BRICS currency. And in order to disrupt that, the West needs world war. The West needs a nuclear war. I mean, this is their last play. The West is losing, you know, the industrial base of America has collapsed from what it used to be. The currency, the value of it is collapsing. The Treasury has a much harder time selling off U.S. debt now, having to pay higher yields. The nation's $34 trillion in debt. It's going to be $41 trillion in 1 year. And we spend $1 trillion a year now to pay the interest on the debt, and that's going to go up to, you know, $1.5 trillion and then $2 trillion and so on. The blowout is here. U.S. cities are collapsing. You know, elections are a joke. The court system is largely a joke. You know, police have been defunded. It's a nightmare. And so, you know the quote, when all else fails, they take us to war. That's exactly what this is. They take us to war. That's why the U.S. tried to provoke Russia this entire time with the Ukraine situation. It was all designed to provoke Russia into launching nuclear weapons. It failed, and Putin never launched nuclear weapons, but man, a lot of his people in Russia wanted him to. So now you've got Israel out there committing these really heinous bombing runs on hospitals and so on. And there was a video over the weekend of an IDF bulldozer rolling over a Palestinian civilian that was laying on the ground. The bulldozer just rolls right over. I'm not going to play that. Obviously, it's rather horrifying, but that made the rounds. And you need to understand, this is a psychological operation to enrage the Arab world in order to get specifically Iran to launch a retaliatory attack, or to get Hezbollah to launch an attack, or to get Turkey to launch a war. Something, you know, Israel and the United States need some big war in order to start launching nukes and to cover up their own financial crimes and their vaccine crimes and depopulation crimes and geoengineering crimes and chemtrailing crimes and all the other crimes that they've been carrying out. They need a war to hide the evidence, just like they needed to bring down Building 7 to bury the evidence of their financial crimes carried out by, you know, the intelligence agencies and so on. They cause a crisis to cover up their crimes and to blame someone new. That's what this is all about. So have no illusions that they are trying to take this thing nuclear. That's their goal, to make it nuclear. In fact, I got to mention this right now. I saw this happening over the weekend, and sales of our iodine products started to spike over the last 24 hours. And I'm recording this very early in the morning on Monday morning, and I'm very fortunate that my core team, they also work late. They stayed up late. And I said, look, we need to put together a special SHTF survival combo pack that people can get today. And my team, you know, they decided to launch the Cyber Monday event today. It's just today at the Health Ranger store, which typically follows a Black Friday event. And we didn't know if we were going to have it, but it's on. But I told my team, look, you need to put together something that can help people survive nuclear fallout. And they did. And so here's what we have for you today. This is only today at healthrangerstore.com. It's called the SHTF Survival Combo Pack. It's $99.95. It's about a 40% savings, which is unheard of in our store. And here it is. You get the Health Ranger Nascent Iodine, 1 ounce. You also get the Iosat Potassium Iodide Tablets, a pack of those, 130 milligrams each, FDA approved. You also get freeze-dried organic yellow miso powder, 100 grams. That was used in Japan after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and you know a lot of people needed nutrition to regenerate after, of course, that horrific event. We also include biostructured silver first aid gel in a tube. That's the first aid gel that I formulated, made from Texas rainwater. And then we also include colloidal silver extra strength spray, 2 fluid ounces at 40 ppm silver. And then finally, the pine needle nasal spray with silver and iodine. That's a nasal spray that we had only been giving away as a free gift. We do not have it for sale because we don't have enough quantity, but we had a few hundred of these remaining, so we put them into this pack. You can get all 6 of those items, the 2 different iodines, the miso powder, the first aid gel, the colloidal silver spray, and the pine needle nasal spray with silver and iodine for $99.95 total. And one other thing, what's happening today at our store, only today, double reward points. Just today. That essentially gives you about 10% back on your purchase in terms of points that you can use on future purchases. So double reward points today only. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/Cyber Monday. No spaces or dashes or anything, just all together, Cyber Monday. So healthrangerstore.com/Cyber Monday. Search for SHTF Survival Combo Pack if you want to take advantage of this special pack that can help you get prepared for events that may be coming based on what we're seeing right now. None of this is looking good. And by the way, we greatly appreciate all your support. We've had a huge outpouring of support over the weekend during our Black Friday events, and we'll be, of course, shipping out all those orders over the next couple of days. Now, there's one more factor that has come into play here recently about Israel and why they might want Gaza. Now, last week we talked about the Ben-Gurion Canal and how this canal would compete with the Suez Canal, and it would be a wider, deeper canal, and it would bring in about maybe maybe $9 or $10 billion a year to Israel, just in terms of canal revenues. And that canal terminates at the Mediterranean Sea, right where the Gaza Strip is. Basically, it would go right through northern Gaza. And isn't that interesting that that's the area that Israel has forced the Palestinians to evacuate? Well, guess what else? It turns out, and I'm reading a tweet that was put out there by Kim.com, Gaza is rich in recently discovered natural gas and oil. And there's a video here from RT, and we'll play just a little bit of this. It's not very long. But you got to hear this, because you'd be shocked to find out the value of the natural gas and the oil, the barrels of oil that are found in essentially Gaza territory. So check out this video.
You probably wouldn't know it, but Gaza is rich, gas rich, at least 1.4 trillion cubic feet rich, to be precise. But there's a catch.
Geologists and natural resources economists have confirmed that the occupied Palestinian territory lies above sizable reservoirs of oil and natural gas wealth in Area C of the occupied West Bank and the Mediterranean coast off the Gaza Strip. To date, the real and opportunity costs of the occupation exclusively in the area of oil and natural gas have accumulated to tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars.
So there we have it. Yet another reason for Israel to take over Gaza, push everybody out, you know, carpet bomb the place, bulldoze the place. Not only can you build the canal, but, oh, guess what? You can claim hundreds of billions of dollars in natural gas resources or energy resources, oil and gas. And isn't this the model that the U.S. empire always pursues? You know, it's like rape and pillage a country. That's what the U.S. empire wants to do to Russia, because Russia sits on, what, one third of the world's resources or you know, natural resources. The U.S. wants to pillage all that. That's why they wanted to destroy Putin and cause economic collapse in Russia and move in, take it over, you know, install a puppet president that's friendly to the U.S. and so on, and then control the resources. I mean, come on. What do you think the Gulf War was all about? Saddam Hussein, you know, the war on Iraq, that was about resources, man. It was about oil. Almost all these wars are wars over energy. And this is probably no different. And so, yeah, the IDF was ordered to stand down on October 7th to allow Hamas to stage its attack in order to outrage the Israeli people, so that there could be justification to go clear out Gaza. And also to, you know, for Israel to attack Lebanon and whoever else they want to attack and just say, well, we found Hamas there, we're going to attack them too. But they especially wanted Gaza. And now we know another reason why. But from the U.S. point of view, they just want a big escalated war and a reason to bomb Iran, as you know. So frankly, this escalation serves the interests of both parties. Israel wants the gas. America wants the war. So they work together, in a sense. I know they don't see eye to eye on everything. You know, the Biden regime is getting a lot of pushback against, you know, the bombing of Gaza and the hospitals being bombed and the civilian deaths and so on. The numbers keep rising every day. And Netanyahu isn't listening to the U.S. at all on those issues. But the U.S. is gaining a pathway to its war escalation in the Middle East that it wants in order to be able to justify bombing Iran and ultimately going to war with Russia. So this is a very, very dangerous situation where we are facing, you know, quite literally a path of escalation into World War III, a nuclear war. And yet almost every person in the U.S. Congress is supporting this. And Trump and RFK Jr. And I mean, who else? It seems almost everybody. Of course, Nikki Haley and others. Of course, Biden. Of course, Barack Obama. They're all in with more war. Very few people are saying no to this. Very few. And look, Israel is doing everything it can to try to provoke an escalation. And here's another example. A story from MiddleEastMonitor.com. Israeli army shoots whoever tries to leave the Al-Shifa hospital, doctor tells Anadolu. So a doctor at the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza City said on Saturday that the Israeli army opens fire on those who want to flee the hospital. The Israeli army has surrounded the hospital and they are not even a meter away. They are at the door, says a gynecologist, told an Anadolu correspondent. They shoot anyone who wants to go out of the hospital. If anyone moves between units, they shoot them. There are many martyrs in the yard in front of the emergency room. The situation is very bad and dangerous. It is indescribable. It's like a prison without water, electricity, or food. There were more than 100 martyrs in the garden. They opened fire at those who tried to bury the martyrs in the hospital yard. The hospital garden is full of martyrs. Some tried to escape the hospital, and they also killed them. They fired at me, too. So this kind of thing, this is clearly, there's no tactical reason for Israeli snipers to shoot doctors, right? That's not war. That's something else. It's a provocation. It's designed to provoke the other Arab nations and probably specifically Hezbollah and Turkey to take action to attack Israel. Israel is basically now painting a big red target on their own foreheads and saying, please attack us, please. Because they need an excuse for the U.S. to take this thing nuclear or for Israel to take it nuclear. My prediction is that the first nuclear round that will be fired in this war, whether it's an artillery round or a missile or rocket, just the first nuclear weapon will be fired by Israel. And that's my prediction. And then it's going to get insane. Turkey will probably have nukes from Pakistan. Iran probably already has nukes. We know Russia has nukes, and they've got the Kinzhal hypersonic missiles. And of course, the U.S. Navy has lots of nukes. This situation is about to get bonkers. And that's exactly what the U.S. empire needs to obliterate its crimes. And, you know, to justify the financial collapse, the global debt collapse that's imminent anyway. They've got to have a cover story. This is the perfect cover story. All right, today we're going to feature an interview with the Liberty Man, John Moore. I interviewed him late last week about the situation, not just the Middle East, but also Russia and Ukraine. And his analysis, I don't agree with everything he says here, but I value his experience and his views. He was a homicide detective. I mean, he's used to following the clues and so on, and he's got a lot of warnings for us today about where this could be going. So it's a worthwhile interview to pay attention to. Just want to remind you that this is the last day of our sales, our deals, our specials at healthrangerstore.com, and that we've got a few hundred of the SHTF Survival Combo Pack available today, only while supplies last. Again, healthrangerstore.com. Double reward points for all purchases today. It ends at midnight, and that's it. We are going to have to raise prices after today on many items because, of course, the supply chain is prices are going up on us for a lot of the raw materials. So we've done a really good job, I think, of keeping prices low or lower than they could have been. You know, we're not the cheapest out there, but we're the only ones who do all this lab testing to ensure the cleanliness of the products that we sell. You know, we test for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology. And of course, dioxin testing is coming up soon. And we're doing atrazine testing for some items as well, such as cashews and corn. And we appreciate your support. Just, we are going to have to ratchet up a few prices moving forward, maybe more than a few. We'll just see where that goes. But we'll do our best to keep prices low. And even if there's a nuclear war that breaks out, we're not going to price gouge anybody. That's not what we do. You're going to see us. We'll do the best we can, you know, to get iodine out to people or to get Ranger buckets, which are the storable food buckets, you know, USDA certified organic storable food. We'll do our best to get it out at current prices as best we can. We don't hike prices on people just because of emergencies or world events or panics or anything like that. But typically that means we'll be sold out pretty quickly once something starts to pop off out there in the Middle East. I guarantee that the day that the first nuke goes off, and I predict that's coming. I think this thing goes nuclear. But the first day that happens, there's going to be a total panic for people to buy things like iodine or miso powder or, you know, food supplies or gold, for that matter, or ammunition, all kinds of things. And, oh, did you see that the Democrat senators, a couple of them, have introduced a bill now that would make it illegal to purchase more than 1,000 rounds of ammo, and you'd be limited to 1,000 rounds every 5 days. Now, if you're buying 1,000 rounds every 5 days, that's a pretty hefty supply, but you'd have to buy all ammo through an FFL, and it would all be recorded and tracked by the federal government through FFLs. That's the new bill. They want to shut down ammo purchases at this point because the ATF is losing on the arm brace rule and also on the ghost guns as well. And, you know, maybe even the bump stocks, we'll see. I think that's going to the Supreme Court. But they've just lost on the arm brace issue because of that ruling that I covered from a judge that issued a nationwide stay on that. So they're going after the ammo next. Yeah, crazy situation. So there are going to be a lot of things that people begin to panic buy, and it's always good to beat the panic and get your supplies squared away, you know, before that happens. So we thank you for your support. Again, healthrangerstore.com, and search for the SHTF Survival Combo Pack. Now, with that said, here is John Moore, the Liberty Man, with a fascinating interview. Enjoy, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we are joined by a very important guest, John Moore, known as the Liberty Man. His website is thelibertyman.com, and he is one of the best analysts of geopolitical events that I've ever met. And he formerly served as a homicide detective for many years, so he's used to investigating, following the trail of evidence, and arriving at conclusions that make a lot of sense. And we're going to talk today about, of course, the situation in the Middle East, and also Ukraine and Russia, and the economic downfall of the West. So all of that straight ahead right here on Brighteon.com. Mr. John Moore, welcome to the show today. It's an honor, sir. It's always an honor to be able to speak with you. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Mike, as always. And yeah, since last time we talked, the world has gone to hell in a handbasket, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Well, but I would say that you called it. You know, you specifically warned about escalating events. We don't always know how that's going to look, but here we are. What do you make of the current situation? Let's start with the Middle East. There's been, you know, an over 30-day siege against Gaza, and Israel believes they can eliminate Hamas and, I guess, take over the entire area. They've got the U.S. backing them with naval forces, but the entire Arab world, plus the Persians and Iran, can't wait to take Israel out if they get the chance. Where do you think this is headed?
Well, that part of the world is an ancient part of the world. Obviously, most of our realtors are Christian. The animosities go back many centuries. But within living memory, all those countries that we call the Middle East were one country, that country being the Ottoman Empire. The goal of the president of Turkey is to reestablish the Ottoman Empire with, once again, Turkey, Constantinople, becoming the capital of the Ottoman Empire, as it was for many, many centuries, up until 1917. The Arab world is ready to sacrifice all the people in Gaza to achieve their goal of eliminating Israel. That's very clear. None of these countries will accept refugees from Gaza. They simply won't do it. So, on one hand. On the other, the goal is Israel is not it's not what most Christians believe it to be. There's two groups of Jews, what I call the real Jews, who are the Sephardic Jews, who have the bloodline of Moses and Abraham. And then there's a make-believe Jews from Southern Europe called the Khazarians, which are not of that bloodline. Their king of that area converted them to Judaism centuries ago for political reasons. And the Khazarians are actually the ones in charge of Israel. Now, My Monday guest, Sam Andrews, who has many friends, active duty, U.S. Army Special Forces, U.S. Navy SEALs. His buddies that are Navy SEALs are telling him that we now have U.S. Navy SEALs on the ground in combat in Israel right now as we speak on the ninth day of November 2023.
In Israel or in Gaza?
Israel, Gaza. I'm using them as synonymous.
So they're engaged in active combat right now.
Yeah. And I asked specifically, and I said, Sam, do you mean they're in an advisory role or a training capacity? He says, no, John, they're in combat in Israel. Now, I don't know what their mission statement is. Sam doesn't know. I hope it's to rescue American hostages. I don't know that, but that would be the best use of American SEALs in Israel right now.
Yes. Yes, well, and it brings up the question of tunnel warfare, because it's of course known that Hamas has this extensive tunnel network, very deep underground. But Israeli reservists in particular, I think there are 300,000 plus Israeli reservists that have been called up. I'd like your assessment, but personally, I don't have much faith that they could be very effective in tunnel warfare or even urban warfare combat. I mean, it seems like Israel in the past, they've been really great at wide open, deserts with tanks and armor and long lines of visibility. That's not what they're facing right now. What's your take?
Well, experience with tunnels is something I don't have personally on one hand. On the other, it's a very specialized area of combat, to say the least. I don't know what the main thing in dealing with the tunnels is having intelligence as to where they are and where all the entrances are. If you know where the tunnels are and where all the entrances are, you don't necessarily have to go down into the tunnels. You could flood them with water. You could smoke them out. You could do any number of things without actually gaining entrance to the tunnels.
Right. So
I don't know what the plan is for the Israeli military. And I agree with you. In the past, the Israeli military, their Air Force, they have an excellent Air Force with F-15s with the latest upgrades. They have excellent missiles and artillery. Their regular infantry is highly trained with great weapons. But doing things in these tunnels is something that no normal human being would want to even go inside those tunnels with all the possibilities of booby traps and so forth that they could meet down there. So I don't know what the plan is. I hope it's an effective plan. The Palestinians are prepared to sacrifice their own people. Clearly, they've built these tunnels underneath hospitals, mosques, and places that typically would not be targets for a bombardment or shelling or anything of that nature. And of course, what's going on, we simply don't know. Yeah, IDF is releasing some information. They're holding back what they need to protect their forces. But let's go back to the beginning. It appears that the government of Israel made sure that the attack of the Palestinians was successful. They took away the weapons from the nearby kibbutz. They shut down necessary security forces that should have been in the area and weren't in the area. A 6 to 7 hour response time by the IDF is unheard of.
Right.
Unheard of. And they're well known for being a rapid response force. And that did not happen. So, and Mossad, which is a small but excellent intelligence service, it goes without saying that they knew about the attack in advance. And within Mossad, there's other things going on. My friend Steve Ben-Noon, who I believe is going to be your guest soon, if he hasn't already. Now, Steve grew up Jewish, a Sephardic Jew. He is a former member of the CIA, and he has friends that are actually in Mossad. This is a side note, but it's an important side note. You probably already know, Mike, that Israel has the highest percentage rate of vaccination for the COVID clot shots of any country on the planet, more than 99%. Here's what you may not know, and Steve can give you more details when you finally get to interview him. There's the Sephardic Jews, the real Jews, the bloodline of Moses and Abraham. They were given the real juice, the real COVID-19 clot shots that kill and injure people. the make-believe Jews, the Khazarians, were not given the real, they were given a saline solution.
Wow.
This is well known within Mossad.
So this is genocide against some of their own.
They have both groups and right. within Mossad. They have the real Jews and the make-believe Jews within Mossad. And prior to this war going on with Gaza, there was a lot of animosity between the two groups. One group knowing they were killing the other group knowing they were being killed by the other. As I've been saying for more than a year, Mike, Israel as we know it will cease to exist in 3 to 5 years. Now, it'll still be in Israel. It won't be the Israel we know, because the plan is to kill off all the Sephardic Jews, the Jews who are of the bloodline of Moses and Abraham. Yeah. Now, the Khazarians, the make-believe Jews, as I call them, from southern Europe, they're taking into their custody Yemenese children. Now, these are Semite children, obviously, of the Arabic language, the Semite language. And they're raising them as Jewish because they know that God needs help to fulfill Bible prophecy. That's a joke, Mike. But that's what they're doing. They're raising the Yemenese children as Jewish to bring the bloodline in line with the Bible and Bible prophecy.
This is a really important point, though, what you bring up. It, for example, Netanyahu has said that, I mean, he's cited scripture, and he's called the Palestinians the Amalek, and it's clear that he and others believe that they must eliminate all Palestinians, and they must destroy the Al-Aqsa Temple in order to have the rebuilding of the temple, in order to, I guess, summon Christ to come back as if Christ couldn't do it on his own.
Well, for them, it's Christ the first time. For them, it would be Christ the first time. For us, it would be Christ
right,
the second time.
Right, but go ahead.
No. It's hard for Americans to comprehend the mindset of people in this ancient part of the world. Most of these Palestinians and other people in the Middle East, no matter what the country, Jordan, Syria, Turkey, they can tell you who their grandfather was 12 generations ago. Very few Americans can tell you who their great-great-grandfather was, let alone 12 generations ago. And the hatreds go back there centuries. When I was in college, Mike, I met a Palestinian young man. He was the same age I was. We're looking at about 22 years old or so. And the hatred that he had towards all Jewish people was one of the most unusual things I've ever seen. The hatred was dripping from his voice. It was so sincere and so profound that he hated all Jewish people. And that's pretty much the way all Palestinians feel about all Jewish people. Now,
But the Israelis feel the same way about the Palestinians,
I was going to say, the hatred is mutual.
Yeah.
And it carries on. But from the time these a young Palestinian or a young Jewish person is born, from the time they're being potty trained, they're trained to hate the opposite parties.
Yes.
The Jews trained to hate Palestinians, and the Palestinians trained to hate the Jews and not trust the Jews. There's no, and Steve may be able to give you more insight into this, but there's almost no social interaction between the two groups. It almost does not exist. The two cultures are so entirely separate and kept that way.
Right.
If there was interaction, especially between youngsters beginning at kindergarten age, interaction where they played with each other, they went to school together, they got to know each other, go to each other's birthday parties, that would be a whole different situation. But that's not allowed to happen. It is not allowed to happen.
Well, but it reminds me, John, that even in the United States, of course, especially during the Trump years, the media pushed a race war narrative and really tried to spark a race war over, you know, George Floyd, for example, or during Obama, the Trayvon Martin. Anytime a young black man or an older black man was killed by police, they tried to spark a race war. Now, it ultimately failed. And now, you know, Black Lives Matter, many parts of that organization have been exposed as financial fraud. You know, fraudsters and taking corporate donations and buying mansions and so on. And one of the co-founders of a significant BLM group just endorsed Donald Trump. So, you know, that failed.
That kind of caught me off guard.
right.
Well, let's we're not restricted to any topic here. Let's talk about George Floyd a little bit.
Sure.
At the local American Legion, we had movie night every Friday night for 8 years. And so I'm sitting next to my pastor, my church. It's movie night. The George Floyd matter just happened a few days before. Everybody on the planet has seen this video of this police officer's knee on the neck of George Floyd. And I said to my pastor, I said, if I can paraphrase what I said, Pastor, they finally have a real matter that they can get behind. And what I didn't know, and nobody knew, for at least it was 3 months or more after the cities had burned, an unknown number of people killed in these various riots around the country. Then they released the other video, the video where George Floyd is handcuffed, sitting in the back of the police cruiser saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. They withheld that until the cities burned, people died.
Yes.
Because if they had released it, everybody would have known and it would have been revealed that one of the well-known symptoms of poisoning from the drug he took is not being able to breathe.
Right.
And so they took him out of the back, and I don't know that this was ever revealed in any confidential interrogations of these officers, but here's what I believe happened. The officers probably thought that George Floyd was claustrophobic. He's sitting in the back of the police car saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. That to me sounds like somebody's claustrophobic, not knowing he was in the process of dying. He had enough drugs in his system to kill 2.5 healthy adult males. So they thought, well, let's do the right thing. This guy's claustrophobic. Let's put him on the ground outside the cruiser until the ambulance gets here, which is what they did. Now, I had a video, I don't believe it's on my website anymore, a martial arts, police martial arts instructor. He's laying on the ground. He has an adult male about the size of the officer in question here, kneeling with his full body weight, knee on the neck of this officer, this instructor on the ground. The instructor is talking in a normal speaking voice. He's not choking to death. And the officer on top of him, the training officer on top of him, has both hands not touching anything, and hardly any weight on the other foot. Clearly all the weight is on the officer's neck that's on the ground. So the whole George Floyd thing was a sham. George Floyd killed himself with a drug overdose. This officer did not. He's become a sacrificial lamb in the whole deal. We had tens of millions of dollars of property damage. I don't know how many people died in these various riots. People running these flim-flam things such as Black Lives Matter getting incredibly wealthy overnight and buying big mansions, as you mentioned.
Right.
And the surprise, surprise, one of them supporting Donald Trump for president. And there's spillover that carries forward to this day, which translates into police department policies changing, police departments being defunded, police departments becoming reduced in numbers of officers on the streets. All is a direct consequence of the George Floyd matter. It's the whole thing was a tragedy. The whole thing was a staged matter in terms of withholding that second video. If that second video had been released, and who held it, whoever held it and didn't allow it to be released, they're directly responsible for all those property being damaged and lives being lost, Mike, in my opinion.
Well,
what do you think?
Clearly, I mean, it's all engineered. It's just like this transgender shooter, that manifesto was held by police and held by the FBI, and it only, you know, 3 pages recently leaked out.
Well, it didn't fit the narrative.
Exactly. So it's selective release of things or holding on to things in order to manage the psychological belief systems of the American people.
Absolutely.
But I think also the same thing is going on in the Middle East as well. And, you know, it's very clear. A lot of war is a psychological operation.
Well, of course it is. Well, my entree into a young adulthood was to be an intelligence analyst in psychological operations in Vietnam. So I have firsthand experience with this professionally, in which what we did was manipulate people's thoughts, manipulate people's beliefs, manipulate their wants and needs. That's what psychological operations does. They did it half a century ago. They still do it. And what I found out since is that young men and women take on the job that I took on as an entree into advertising and marketing in the private sector.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I've met these young men, and these young men and young women in their early to mid-20s, they want to have a career in American advertising, American marketing, and they start out in psychological operations as an intelligence analyst, or one of the other jobs that we have, which are identical to jobs in the private sector in advertising and marketing, Mike.
Wow. That's astonishing. And yeah, I mean, we see elements of psychological operations, of course, in the Middle East, as I mentioned, but I want to go to that for a second, because there has been some breaking news today. Number one, within the U.S. State Department, there's a civil war in essence, among the leftists in the State Department who tend to side with Palestine, right? They tend to be anti-Israel. And they are seeing their administration, the Biden administration and Antony Blinken, going along with Israel on everything. So we've seen at least one significant person resign, and we're seeing a lot of pushback internally. And then secondly, there was announced today that daily there will be a four-hour ceasefire, which the U.S. won't even use the term ceasefire. They're calling it a humanitarian pause.
Right.
So each 24 hours, there will be 4 hours without bombs, which still sounds like hell to me. But 4 hours without bombs, that's not enough time to get trucks, aid trucks in and unload them and get them back out. So you're still screwed if you're an aid convoy. You can't get in and out in 4 hours. But what do you make of the two things I mentioned, the civil war inside the State Department or inside the Biden administration, and then the four-hour ceasefire?
I look at the four-hour pause as a attempt to appease both sides.
Uh-huh.
The one side that's pro-Palestinian wants a ceasefire, a complete cessation of hostilities. The pro-Israeli side wants no cessation or no pause at all. So the 4 hours, and chances are there was either a focus group to decide what would appease or appeal to both sides, or direct contact with the Hamas leadership and the Israeli leadership to see what would be an acceptable agreement between the two sides. 4 hours is not much, you're right. And I don't know what can be, you know, obviously the combatants on both sides will use that 4 hours, Israeli military and the Palestinian terrorists will use that 4 hours to move ammunition, move weapons, move people without fear of being bombed. And whatever humanitarian aid gets in there, I say more power to them. They're victims in all modern wars, and most wars before that,
yes,
are the innocent civilians. And my heart goes out to innocent civilians, no matter what the war is, no matter where it is. It's the innocent civilians who always pay the price.
So true.
And the terrorists, the Palestinian terrorists, know this, and they don't care. They're perfectly willing to use innocent women and children and older men, elderly men, as human shields to achieve their goals, which is absolutely barbaric. But
yes, but
it is. Go ahead.
I completely agree with what you just said, but I would also add, and perhaps a little bit of pushback, that Israel is also willing to kill innocent civilians, obviously, and they have killed over 10,000 Palestinians at this point.
Well, there's an unfortunate, you know, look at Dresden, Germany, which was a center of education and music and culture and art. It was not a military target at all, not even a little bit. And we bombed the hell out of it and killed thousands of men and women and children. That was us, the good guys, the allies.
Yes, but that act today under the Geneva Convention would be considered a war crime.
It was, the Geneva Convention was in effect since about 1900. Mike,
it's been modified over. I mean, there was a lot of response after Dresden and Hiroshima.
I mean, I don't know the nuances or what the current content of the Geneva Convention is. I do know that it's, and I'm not defending killing innocent men, women and children.
Sure.
I'm just stating the obvious that that's part of all wars all the time, is innocent men, women and children die. Unfortunately, that's always a part of all wars. I know Americans, officers and leadership, they go out of the way to avoid these kind of casualties, but knowing full well they're going to happen.
I agree with what you just said. I think the American military men and women, they do go out of their way to avoid civilian casualties. And you could even argue that Russia went out of its way to avoid civilian casualties in its battle with Ukraine. Israel is making no effort to avoid civilian casualties. I mean, when you're bombing entire universities and hospitals and refugee camps, you're trying to cause civilian casualties. I mean, that's there is a qualitative difference in what in Israel's response. And this is, see, I think it's designed to provoke the Arab world into a reaction. That's my theory, because it's this is not normal Western. These are not NATO type of engagements here. This is something different. NATO wouldn't act this way. Modern German army wouldn't act this way. In my understanding, British army wouldn't act this way. Why is Israel doing it?
Well, I can't answer why that is. It's a different culture, a different people, a different mindset. I know it's routine for school teachers, elementary school teachers, to take their Israeli children on a field trip to have an M1 carbine slung across their back. It's a whole different way of living. It's a whole different mindset. And I'm not going to be an apologist for the Israeli policies. I'm going to say that I'm not there. I don't live under those conditions. And it's, unless you're, what's the old Indian saying? You need to walk a mile in my moccasins first. I haven't walked a mile in their moccasins. I know it's different. It's a different mindset. It's a different part of the world. It's hard for Americans, and at least myself, to really comprehend the age of that part of the world. Now,
right.
I haven't been to the Middle East, but I've been to Prague, Czech Republic. I had a speaking engagement there. And I was at Prague Castle, which is still in daily use as part of the federal government. And I didn't go inside, but I walked past a tavern, Mike, that's been serving alcohol to the public since before Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492.
Wow.
I mean, that's... Around my neighborhood, if something's 100 years old, it's really old. But it's hard to comprehend for the Western mind, the American mind, buildings and structures that are more than 1,000, 2,000 years old of
true.
That nature. And the whole culture is so foreign and so unfamiliar with Americans. I don't want to put myself in a place of judging them, because I don't live there. I don't live under those circumstances. Having rockets and mortars thrown at you is from those various countries, Jordan and so forth, is nothing new. There's, especially Lebanon, there's always here and there the occasional mortar, the occasional rocket that gets shot into Israel from these various Arabian strong posts or around the country there. So I think for myself, I'm going to make note of what the Israelis are doing, make note that, in my opinion, it's not the right thing to do, and also withhold judgment because I'm not there. I'm not Israeli. I don't have to worry if my five-year-old child going to kindergarten in Israel is going to come home safe and sound because there might be a mortar attack or a rocket attack any time. I don't believe there's any place in the entire country of Israel that's safe from rockets and mortars, and now they're using drones, of course. I don't believe that safe place exists, Mike. Do you?
Well, no, but I think that's what happens when
before the
1948
attacks,
and Israel right. displaced, you know, the Palestinians who were there first, you know?
Well,
I mean, you're going to set off warfare.
Of course you are.
And then what Israel is doing now, having dropped 25,000 tons of bombs on Gaza, the third most densely populated area in the world, almost half children, to drop more bombs than the entire detonation number of the Hiroshima atomic bomb. I mean, this is larger than Hiroshima, to drop that number of bombs on residential areas, knowing that Hamas is actually underground. Hamas is in the tunnels, and you're bombing the apartment buildings and hospitals on the surface. You know, that, come on.
Right.
That's,
well, it's, you know, most Americans, myself included, are against needless civilian casualties, what we might call collateral damage. We're against it. We don't support it. All we can do as Americans is observe and make comments. That's about all we can do. Now, I don't believe there's been any aid authorized by Congress yet. There's talk of dollar amounts being spent to help Israel. I don't know if it's going to pass Congress or not, because we have within Congress, just like the State Department, we have both pro and anti-Israeli groups.
That's true.
Pro-Hamas, anti-Hamas groups in the U.S. Congress and the Senate both.
Yes.
And I know some of the conservative congressmen are trying to tie something like maybe building a border wall in exchange for sending aid to Israel. I don't know what's going to be successful.
That would be an interesting negotiation. I mean,
well, it would be.
As I've said, Congress is Israel first, Ukraine second, and America last. we've been treated to.
Well, there's some truth to that. Now, unfortunately, another side effect of putting Israel aside for a moment. Another side effect of helping Ukraine, is that we're expending our warehouses full of artillery shells, ammunition, other stocks of military equipment that we should have in reserve to fight a war if we need to fight a war. Instead, they're going to Ukraine. And of course, Ukraine is well known to be one of the most corrupt governments on the planet.
Yes.
There's already been weapons that were shipped to Ukraine to help Ukrainians being recovered from the hands of Palestinian terrorists. There's been attempts to get an accounting, a detailed accounting of just where these weapons and ammunition went in Ukraine. That's been resisted. It's being resisted for a reason, because they can't give an accounting without exposing themselves. A quick segue here, Mike, a friend of mine, he's a computer geek, a former Marine. He had a job with the Pentagon for a while. That job ended when he exposed corruption and money being mishandled.
Uh-huh.
He thought that was his job to find it. But when he did find it and did expose the money being spent improperly, he got fired.
Well, of course, because I mean, that's Joe Biden was bragging about that, right? You know, even before the rigged election, Biden was bragging that he got the was it, the Burisma investigation team fired. But I'm glad you're mentioning Ukraine. I want to ask you about this. How do you think that this situation ends? I mean, let me lay this out. It's clear that Zelensky's desperate. It's clear that Zelensky's days are numbered. Ukraine has run out of men. I mean, hundreds of thousands of casualties. Their forces are decimated. They've run out of munitions for the most part. They've run out of money now, and there's not much willingness for the U.S. to continue to fund them, nor from other Western European countries as well. And Russia clearly has the upper hand, I mean, decisively. You know, Ukraine's counteroffensive did not work. Go ahead.
Early in 2015, I was asked to put together a team to go to Ukraine, a team of reformer special forces troops, which I know a lot of these guys, and I'm one myself, to go to Ukraine and train Ukrainian special forces to be compliant with NATO special forces in command and control communications, tactics and equipment and so forth. And I had the team all put together. We were ready to go. And then we were told the operation was not going to happen. We were told early on that it was being funded by a Ukrainian oligarch. After it was all over and we called it a day, we found out that it was actually a CIA operation, not a Ukrainian oligarch. So that was in 2015. Once again, the parties being hurt in Ukraine are the innocent civilians.
Right.
Ukraine is drafting young men, giving them minimal training, putting them in uniform, putting them on a battlefield where they're being killed and injured. Russians, of course, have a massive army. You know, Russia has 12 time zones. It's hard to, you know, we have 4 time zones continental United States. It's hard to imagine a landmass, one country, that has 12 time zones. It's the only country on the planet that has that many time zones. And they have massive numbers of men in their military, massive stockpiles of ammunition, tanks, artillery, everything they need to fight a major war. And they're not depleting their war stocks like the United States is and various NATO countries. There's a thought, and you may or may not have ever interviewed my friend Jeff Nyquist, but
yes,
Jeff,
I have, yeah.
Jeff's authored 6 books on this topic. He sat across the interview table from high-level KGB defectors, and his belief and my belief is that part of what Russia is doing is to deplete the NATO nations of their stocks to fight a war.
Yes, and they've done that successfully.
Precisely. Now, there's a big difference between the United States and Russia when it comes to manufacturing capacity. I'm going to say, Mike, what's the nearest city to you in Texas?
Well, let's say Austin.
Austin. I said, Mike, let's make a lunch appointment tomorrow, and let's visit a Russian car dealership in Austin.
Yeah, there are none.
There are none. The country that has equivalent population, United States, about 250 million people, or 300 million, thereabouts. Nobody buys a Russian car. No, what person in their right mind would do that? And who buy, you know, let's go buy a pair of Russian boots. Let's go buy, what do they sell for export except vodka and petroleum products? Maybe.
Yeah, but Russian artillery is pretty badass.
Well, that, you know, going to Afghanistan for a moment, within 24 hours of U.S. leaving the airport in Kabul, the international arms dealers were landing in Kabul and booking rooms in the nicest hotels in Kabul. The international arms trade, the most important word is international.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it is. Russia doesn't make money by selling automobiles. They make money by selling tanks and trucks and artillery to governments all over the planet.
Right.
That's what their manufacturing capacity is dedicated to and always has been. So we're depleting our
They're good at it. And their drones, you know, their Landsat drones, their anti-air defense systems, their hypersonic missiles. I mean, they are no joke.
Right. Well, they have missiles that can go five times the speed of sound. We don't, unless we have some space-based weapon that's not publicly known, we don't have any way to counter that. They have torpedoes that go 100 miles an hour. We don't have a countermeasure I'm aware of that can stop these.
Right.
Many of our anti-missile platforms have really never been tested in a full-blown war. They've been tested in test exercises, but never in a full-blown combat environment. So Russia and China have a plan. The plan is to take over the world, quite frankly. China knows, and we talk about racism. Mike, you don't know what racism is until you've been around the Han Chinese. There's about 20 plus ethnic groups in China. The Han run the country. And the Han Chinese, they know they're most handsome, the most attractive, the most intelligent, the best people on the planet. And don't try to tell them otherwise. They know that the 21st century is their century. The top Chinese defense minister 20 years ago gave a speech outlining his plan to colonize the lower 48. It will become new China, and there will be no Americans present. That's the plan. And they don't plan on incorporating Chinese in this country. They figure that Chinese living in the United States have been compromised and can't be salvaged to conform with the Chinese way of thinking.
Right, so right. They plan genocide in the continental United States. Yeah, it's very clear from speeches of some of the military leaders. And, you know, I have other sources that have told me that U.S. National Guard bases across the United States are nearly depleted of not just ammunition, like 155 artillery rounds, but the actual artillery pieces, the big
right.
guns.
Well, they're used up and wore out. We've been in continuous war for more than 20 years.
And you're right. But I mean, also they've been just shipped. They take, you know, the supply that's supposed to defend America and they just ship it to Ukraine.
And never comes back.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Right. Well, even before Ukraine came up, our National Guard was used up and wore out. And young men and women would for decades before these wars would join the National Guard to get the training, get college benefits and so forth. But it became very clear about 22, 23 years ago that joining the National Guard was the equivalent of joining the active duty army, because they've been using up these National Guard outfits in Iraq and Afghanistan. And yes, they are in fact used up and wore out, and the equipment's gone and is not being replaced. We don't have the manufacturing capacity to quickly replace what's been shipped overseas.
So then to your point in bringing in China, what you're saying is that through these maneuvers involving Ukraine and Russia and so on, the U.S. is more vulnerable now than ever. For a land, I mean, an invasion, a border invasion, or an internal activation of sabotage, well, or what have you.
Mike, you and I are part of what's called the alternative media on one hand. On the other, President Donald J. Trump last night in Hialeah, Florida, mentioned World War III being a possibility several times. This is not some wild conspiracy theory. When you have a former president openly talking about the possibility of World War III, I think it's time to wake up and smell the coffee.
Yes.
And, you know, it's one thing for the alternative media to say that people like myself and you and Steve Quayle and others, Doug Hagman. But when a former president says it, yes, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, nothing I can do, nothing you can do, most of our listeners that are not in high level in the Pentagon, I know there's a few, can't do anything to stop it. But we can take personal measures to ensure the safety and security of our own families, having a secure place away from a major city,
yes.
Having a what I call a hobby farm, where you grow your own food, you have a proprietary source of water, you have trusted neighbors who ideally would be conservative Christian patriots that will look out for each other during a crisis. That's where I live. And many parts of the United States are the same way.
You're in a good, you're in a real good area. I think where you live is one of the best choices in the country.
I agree. In the Arkansas, Missouri Ozarks. And I know it's, moving to a new location is not easy. It's expensive. Right. It's time consuming. It's disrupting to your whole life. Everything you know changes on one hand. On the other, it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
We have, in my neighborhood, we have people coming here from California, from the East Coast, changing their life, turning their life upside down to be in a safe area for themselves, their children, their grandchildren, establish a safe haven for the family to escape to that remain on the East Coast or West Coast, wherever they might be. And that's a smart thing to do, no matter who you are, is to bite the bullet, set up a safe haven some distance from a major city where you can grow your own food, have trusted conservative Christian neighbors. Even if we don't have World War III, it's still a lot better lifestyle, in my opinion, Mike.
Well, we still have the issue of the debt collapse, and we only have a few minutes left. I want to get your response on this. According to a calculation published by Zero Hedge, the United States government is now spending $1 trillion a year just in paying the interest on the debt. And that interest payment is, of course, increasing constantly, you know, because of higher interest rates and so on. Also, the difficulty of selling off U.S. debt because other countries don't want to buy it as much. And that means you have to pay a higher interest rate, obviously. So at $1 trillion a year, and plus all the money printing that's going on, it was also calculated in that same story that in 1 year, our debt will reach $41 trillion. It's currently $33 trillion. In one more year, it'll be $41 trillion. And then likely in another year after that, if we last that long, it's going to be $50 trillion and so on. You know, obviously this ends at some point. How do you think it ends? Any insight?
There's a free paper, free download, paper I wrote in 10 years ago, titled No Need for Panic. And there I make a statement that it's well known among the people who are doing this, the consequences of spending the national fortune like a drunk sailor. And the consequences have been known for 5,000 years at least, on one hand. On the other, if you know and you believe it no longer matters, why not go ahead and do that spending? So they know what the consequences are going to be. They know it doesn't matter because what's set in place, there's only two ways to settle what's being done with this outrageous spending. One is to dramatically increase taxes, which they can't do that enough without destroying the economy. The other is to walk away from the debt, just like declaring bankruptcy, which means nobody's going to buy your U.S. Treasury notes anymore if you do that. Both have serious consequences that are very bad. So they're continuing the Ponzi scheme of spending more money, making it look like everything's normal, while at the same time, China is unloading U.S. Treasury bonds. Other countries are selling off their Treasury bonds. We will be at a point in not too distant future where, of course, we already got the Fed buying back Treasury bonds, by the way.
Right.
And when you're buying your own debt, I mean, that's a sure sign things are screwed up. But we'll be at a point where the only buyer is going to be the Federal Reserve for right. our own debt. Once we reach that point, which is probably not too far off, it's game over. It's obviously game over. Now, we have some states that are instituting their own currency backed by gold. That's a smart thing. I think we may see several more states do that. These governors, these states, and these legislatures, they're not stupid. They know history. They know what's coming. And they're doing the best they can. I would love to see Texas have a gold-backed currency.
Yeah, me too.
For example. That would be wonderful. And if you live in a state where that's not taking place, maybe you can get politically active and encourage your state legislature to have a gold-backed currency for your state. Every state that does that would be helpful for the survival of the rest, don't you think?
I completely agree. And so John, this has been a fascinating discussion. We're out of time here. I want you to give out your broadcast information and also remind viewers, thelibertyman.com is your website. Right. How can people hear your show?
Well, everything's linked on my Republic Broadcasting out of Round Rock, Texas, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Time. And out of Republic Broadcasting, everything, my archives, and I have Bridie on archives, by the way. Everything's linked to my website at thelibertyman.com, the live show and the archives both.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, John.
It was great, Mike. Let's do this again soon.
I want to do it again soon. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. I appreciate your analysis and your vast history and experience that applies to what's going on today. So thank you so much for sharing your
time
with us.
You're welcome, Mike. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay. You too. God bless. All right. And for all of you watching, I hope you found value in that interview. You can repost this on other channels. Feel free to do so. And just give a link to thelibertyman.com. Thank you for joining me today. And I pray for us all right now. We are headed into the most difficult times that any of us have ever lived through. That's for sure. Thank you for watching today. Mike Adams here of Brighteon.com. Take care. All right. I'm going to do something unusual for you today. I've got here the Ranger buckets from healthrangerstore.com. That so many people have invested in as a food supply. This is certified organic, laboratory verified, but I'm going to actually go through and open these and show you what's in them today and show you our dedication to the kind of packaging, the kind of secure packaging, and the quantity of what you get in here. This is just one of these are almonds in here, one of the types of packaging that we have. I want you to notice how secure it is. You know, you can, no, it's okay, sit. I don't want my dog to get alerted by that. But you've got different nuts and seeds in the package, and then if you take off this lid, there we go, you've got these kinds of hard bricks, a vacuum packed with the aid of nitrogen in this very rigid, rugged, thick material that prevents oxygen from oxidizing these products. So here we have black beans. You know, here we have lima beans. Here we have millet and rice. Again, all certified organic, all laboratory verified. We test them for heavy metals. We test them for pesticides, such as, or herbicides like glyphosate, flax seeds here. We test them for microbiology to make sure that you're not getting E. coli, salmonella, yeast, or mold. Here's red lentils, high protein, again, all certified organic. And in this pail, it makes it virtually rodent proof. So more of the smaller packages here, these tend to be nuts and seeds, and some butter powder. Now, the ingredients vary based on what's actually available right now from the world supply of food. So you need to go to our website, healthrangerstore.com, to see what's actually in the buckets that are available right now. It can vary, but here's certified organic popcorn. Here's red beans. Here's quinoa. Here's some more small red beans, pinto beans. And, oh, that might be palm sugar and cacao powder. It just depends. It varies based on what we have available. So you'll have to go there and check it. But look, this is what you get in a two-bucket set. It's a huge number of servings. It can feed a lot of people for an extended period of time. The actual statistics are on the website. If you want to know how many calories and how many servings, it's all right there at healthrangerstore.com. But folks, this is built for long-term storage. This is no joke. Between the buckets that are very rugged and roadworthy, you can take these on the road. They can handle a certain amount of abuse. And the sealed packages that keep out oxygen and prevent oxidation, this is serious long-term preparedness. And then these can be used in, you know, hundreds of different recipes. And you can add things like if you have availability of butter or even lard, if you're into animal products, you can add those other ingredients to various meals and soup mixes using these base ingredients. And then you can get your nutrition that way and you can make it through an extended period of societal failures, food shortages, famine, or even food inflation. All of these food items are going to go up in price as time goes on here, you know, because of the collapsing value of the dollar. And what that means is it's never going to be as affordable as it is right now. Food prices aren't going down. They're only going up. But this is a tremendous amount of food. And it's when you cook it, of course, it expands because these are dried formats. So this, even here, as much as this is with the stacks and the pouches and everything, it looks like so much more when you actually cook it. So again, look at the website, healthrangerstore.com, search for Ranger Buckets. And if you don't need this much food or you just want one of these items, you can get what are called mega buckets or mini buckets that focus on, you know, just one or two materials. All right, so here's an example of a mega bucket. Right here, this one contains only hard red wheat that is certified organic and lab tested, as are all our products. But you can get these individual buckets that are dedicated to one item if you wish, if you just want more of one certain thing. And we have these number 10 cans here, by the way, of different products. This is a certified organic palm sugar, a low glycemic sweetener. And here's a number 10 can of just macadamia nuts. And even though these have plastic lids, they're sealed steel cans. So they're completely rodent proof with very long shelf life. They're very rugged and they're also easy to handle because of their size. And again, we have all kinds of different food items, whether it's nuts, seeds, grains, legumes, all kinds of things, including whey protein, powdered milk, things like that, available right now at healthrangerstore.com. If you're concerned at all about the availability of the food supply, then you absolutely want to check this out because what we have is unmatched anywhere in the world. Nobody does as much laboratory testing for the cleanliness of their foods as we do. Nobody in the world. And we do more testing than anybody. We have our own ISO accredited laboratory that we operate that is audited. It is inspected. It is, and our whole facility is, by the way, certified organic USDA audited and inspected annually, if not more often, including kosher certification for most of these items as well. You can find all the details on our website, again, healthrangerstore.com. When you're looking for backup food supplies, this is your answer right here. We've got it. We've been making this for years. We ship ourselves out of our own warehouse, our own fulfillment center in Central Texas, and we're ready to deliver these products to you right now so that you can get prepared. And of course, every purchase helps support our network and our efforts here at Brighteon.com. So thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and get prepared is all I can say for what's coming. Thank you again for your support. God bless you. God bless America. Take care.